Welcome to the How to Raise Money podcast for anyone who wants to raise other people's money for a business or property venture. Right now, there has never been more money on the planet, and there has never been more opportunity. This podcast will help you put the two together. So, if you need money for your business or property proposals from banks, lenders, angels, whales, or dragons, this is the podcast for you.
Hi, and this is the How to Raise Money podcast with me, Ray McLennan.
And with me, Nigel Best.
And with him, Nigel Best.
Hi, Ray. How are you doing?
Hi, I'm doing very good. Yeah. Now, for those of you who are listening to this, we are not in the same room. We are using Skype and we're using call recorder on Skype. So I hope it comes out okay. I'm sure it will. We've tested it to the nth degree. Today's podcast is about how to raise money through the traditional high street banks.
Whoa, Ray, hold on. That sounds like crazy talk. Raising money through normal banks. Are these the high street banks? Are these the banks that you and I have grown up with all our lives?
That's it. Williams and Glynn's, Midland, you know. Are they still around?
Midland, yeah. I think I've still got my Griffin Saver hold all somewhere.
All right, okay.
I even have the pencil case as well.
TSB, I'm sure I have a passbook somewhere with a couple of quid in it. It's probably compound interest has probably taken it to at least 4 quid by now.
I think actually your TSB account was worth a couple of million, Ray. But sadly, due to an unforeseen IT error, it's all gone.
I think you're right. Okay, so how do you raise money from a traditional bank? And the word on the street is that banks are not lending. And obviously, we're talking about how to raise money, raising alternative finance, raising funding from angel investors, challenger banks, that sort of thing. So why on earth would we want to go to the high street banks? And for the avoidance of doubt, I'm talking about NatWest.
It's a good question.
Yeah, well, NatWest, Lloyds, Bank of Scotland, Royal Bank of Scotland. Who else is there? Barclays. All these, you know, the usual high street banks.
Yeah, HSBC.
HSBC, that's it. Now,
Santander, there you go.
Santander.
Do I get a prize if I get one?
Yeah, keep going. Raise another one. There's another one. Now, the thing about these banks is that obviously since the downturn, the crash, the financial crisis, 2007, 2008, 2009 and onwards from there, they've had a bad reputation. And the word on the street is that they're not lending, or if they are lending, then it's not what you want. You know, you can put in an application and it takes 2-3 months and then you find out you haven't got it, or their loan to value is going to be so low that you're not going to be able to do anything. So I wanted to kind of explore and find out if there was any way around this. And if you stay listening to this podcast, you will hear that there is a way around it.
Let me just jump in there. So have you got hotline to the chief exec of one of these banks, or did you just walk into a normal high street branch and ask some simple questions? It couldn't have been as easy as that, could it?
Well, I did both, actually. I tried to get answers from the banks themselves, and then eventually I did speak to the chief executive officer of a major bank, and he introduced me and organised a meeting with the head of property for this national bank. Head of property who has £21 billion right to invest in property in the UK. So, yeah, I did.
Interesting.
Very.
What was the result then, Ray? So you went down. What was on your agenda? What were you trying to find out? If someone's got £21 billion, is a pound for 21 billion people, or is it going to a few with a lot of money?
Well, basically, I wanted to see, first of all, if it was true, were they lending? Were they lending? And if they were lending, who were they lending to? And why did they manage to get through the quagmire of bureaucracy and get funded when anecdotally, a lot of developers, a lot of people are saying they couldn't get funded? So, that was my agenda. I wasn't being overly aggressive. I wanted to do it as a form of discussion. Okay. I had said to them, you know, I was no journalist. I had no agenda. I wasn't out to try and catch them out or anything. I was just interested from an interested bystander then. I was also finding a lot of money for people through angel investors, through alternative funds. And when I did hear of people getting funded from the bank, they were getting funded at pretty competitive rates. So if there's a competitive rate out there, we want to be able to get it for people who apply through funding. So I did have an agenda. I was interested to find out. And then if I did find out a way of doing it, I want to let people know so that they can make applications for funding through the banks.
This sounds great, Ray. The fact that you're going out there on behalf of other people who may not have the contact at all to get this sort of response. But hopefully your meeting revealed a few secrets, a few ways that you could prepare for this sort of thing. It's tools that you can put in your toolbox to go down and access the bank's money a little bit easier. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. And that is what this podcast is all about, Nigel.
Fantastic.
So the banks want three things. Each begins with a C. They want collateral, they want cash flow, and they want character. Collateral, cash flow, and character. Now, collateral meaning unencumbered property or something that you're going to buy that you can put up as security for the loan. The next thing is they want cash flow to service
the
loan.
Just on that one, right? Then that raises, have you got skin in the game?
That's what they want. They want to know you've got skin in the game. They're not going to fund 100%.
So does that mean if you don't really have any skin in the game, the high street banks are not for you?
Correct. But the skin in the game doesn't have to be your skin. It can be someone else's skin. I mean, if you open an account and you find a joint venture partner and that joint venture partner puts up the money, some money, 10, 20, 30%, then you can get the balance from a high street bank. So if you have your...
That's good thinking.
Yeah, you have your account with them, company account. You sell some shares in the business or you get a JV partner who's going to split the profits with you and he puts the money in the account, then, you know, that's your skin in the game. It doesn't have to be your skin, as long as there is some skin.
Okay, cool.
So that's the collateral. So they want some collateral. They want unencumbered property as security. So if you're buying a building and it's £1 million, then you want to aim to have 250,000 or 300,000 of your own money or a JV partner's money in the bank. And then you're going to get the balance from the bank. You would then give them the whole of the property as security for the loan. So they would put up anything from 600 to 750,000, but they would get the property that has a valuation of £1 million as security against that loan. That's how that would work. Now, the next thing they want is cash flow to service the loan. Now, for a trading business, that's relatively easy to produce. For a property business, you're going to have to roll up the cash flow to service the loan. So if you are borrowing some money and the loan repayments are, I don't know, would work out at £10,000 a month, then clearly you can't pay £10,000 a month because your business is... Well, it's not generating any cash. It's not going to generate any cash until such time as you've sold on the property or until you've rented it out or until you've, you know, got heads on beds or whatever it happens to be. So you'd be looking to roll that up.
Yes.
So if it's 10,000 a month over, 10 months, that's 100,000, then you would be rolling that up towards the end of the loan. And they would take that into consideration. The final C is character. Now, we've spoken before about the CREST model, which is credibility, return, exit, security, and trust. Well, the character part for the bank is credibility and then the trust. So they want to know that you've got a track record, that you've... They need to know their client. So they need to... KYC, they call it. They need to know who you are, find out about you, and generally know that you're capable of doing this project, of seeing it through, either rolling up your sleeves and getting on with it or managing and controlling a team that can get on with it. So that's the three things that the banks want.
So just on that last one, when you're talking about character, does it help if your background is in finance, if your background is in property management, if your background is you've been in data center, are there relevant sort of employment histories that help on this sort of thing? Or are they looking for someone that's demonstrated something along these lines beforehand? Because I'm guessing it comes down to the old chicken and egg of, I want to do a bigger deal, but I've never done a bigger deal, so I can't get confirmation from someone to show that I've done the bigger deal in order to get funding for the bigger deal, and where do you go? What's the sort of level in there of prior experience that the banks are happy with?
Well, they're looking for direct relevant experience. So if you've done houses of multiple occupancy, or you've done single buy-to-lets, or you've flipped a bungalow, you know, you bought a bungalow, done it up, sold it on, and you've done maybe 10 of those, and now you want to do a commercial conversion of, you know, 30, 40 flats, that's not direct. For them, that's not going to be credible enough. So you might have to bring in a JV partner who has that experience, or you might need to bring someone on the team who has direct experience. So if you bring on, and again, we can help with that. I can introduce people, and have done in the past. We've introduced a number of people who've become non-execs or shareholders of the firm that's going to do the commercial conversion because they've got direct experience. So if you, Nigel, were wanting to convert a building into 30 flats, you'd never done it before, I would bring someone in, or I can introduce you to someone that I think you'd get on with. Once you've done that conversion, you've now got direct experience. So now you, Nigel, can go back and do another one without needing someone else. Now, it also works in reverse.
Yeah, absolutely.
It works in reverse, as in I've had people who've been working for property companies where they've, you know, been involved in building huge skyscrapers in London, but they've been employees of a building company and now they want to do something for themselves. And they feel a bit disheartened that they're being turned down because they've not got direct experience. And they're saying, well, I built the Shard, or I built such and such a 500 bed hotel. Now I want to do 10 flats of my own and you're not letting me have it. That's because there's a completely different set of skills needed to manage a property of that size versus a smaller property. So in that instance, it's still better to bring in someone who has relevant experience. So it works, you know, it works both ways.
Okay, and on those people that you bring in, what would be the cost of bringing someone like that in? Would they take a bit of the equity, a bit of the profit? Would they take a straight fee? How would that be set up? How would it run? And how would it? What would the exits be from something like that?
Okay, well, the last one, we'll give you an example. It was just slightly over £1 million, 1.2 million for a commercial conversion in North London. And the developer, the person proposing it, was coming up against this wall of you don't have enough direct experience, so we needed to find someone. We did find someone. We found a developer who had done similar size developments. They came in as a director of the company, so they were now on the team, and they were going to be paid a flat fee. This was a year-long project, and they were going to be paid a flat fee of £25,000 for just putting their hand on the tiller, turning up, you know, occasionally, I think once a month or something, just to see, make sure everything was okay. They weren't getting any kind of percentage, simply because they just wanted simply a flat fee. We had another one where they wanted to share in the equity. And then we did another one still where the chap that was brought in to shore up and add credibility, the banks really liked him, but they wanted him to give a personal guarantee on the project. And he was happy to do that, but then obviously that meant that the negotiated JV figure went up. So I can't remember what it was, but it was double what he asked for. So if it was 10%, it went to 20%, that sort of thing, plus expenses. So this guy would be travelling, I think he was travelling about 40 miles to where the project would be. So he wanted his expenses covered and a sort of retainer on a monthly basis. Now, you can build that into the costs of converting a project. That's just some of the costs that get built in. If you were going with a private lender, they might have their own quantity surveyor who you have to pay a couple of grand a month to check up. So it's quite common. It's quite common that these fees are met.
Okay, that's interesting. All good stuff. Does this tie in as well with getting other people on board, like architects and other related professionals, and again leverage their experience in the market, what they've done, how they've done things?
Well, they're going to be there anyway. The banks will generally not look at your architect. They'll look at the architect as, okay, he's a member of the team because he's an architect, and as long as he's a member of the Chartered Institute of Architects, that's great. But in terms of having skin in the game and in the project, they're looking more at the project manager. Who is the project manager? So an architect would not be a useful person to shore you up from a credibility point of view to convert. Some architects would take umbrance at that, I'm sure, but they're looking for project managers, someone who's going to be boots on the ground, someone who's going to be directing the tradesmen, making sure the deliveries turn up, making sure everything goes along to schedule. That's the kind of credibility character that they want to see.
Yeah, good stuff. Good stuff.
Okay, so this bank then that I went to see and I wanted to find out, so here's the nuggets. We're now getting down to what can you do. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, right, okay, how can I get some money from the high street banks? I suppose the first question is, why would you want money from the high street bank? Well, the main thing is it's a high street bank and they can lend money at relatively keen rates of interest. I've seen some people dealing with some of the banks and they're paying 3%, 4%, and 5%, whereas a challenger bank or an alternative finance provider would charge 7%, 8%, or 9%, or maybe even more. So you want to access money as cheaply as you can, as you possibly can. And that's why I don't think that you should neglect the high street banks. But how do we overcome then? This question is, how do we overcome this 3-month gap? How do we get the banks to say yes? How do we get the banks to be on our side? And the answer is that they need to know you. They need to know about you. They need to know what you're doing. They need to know what you're up to. So keep in touch with them. So step one, go and see your bank. Find out who your property manager is and just go and see him. Now, you don't need to ask him for any money at this stage. You're just going to see him, find out who he is, get his name, get his contact details, and let him know who you are. And just tell him that you're in the business of property. You're looking to buy property, to convert it, to flip it, to refurbish it, or whatever it is that you want to do. Make him aware and don't ask him for any money. Then you want to keep in touch with him on a regular basis. Now, I encourage people to do a thing called Follow Up Friday, which is essentially an email. It can be a one-liner. It could have attachments, just simply saying, here's what I'm up to. This week I have looked at 12 properties. This week I have bid on 3 commercial buildings. I'm hoping to get them. I don't need the money from you, Mr. Bank, because I've organised it through Raising Angel Finance or through West Street Capital or somewhere else. So I've got the funding. I have a private investor who's going to put the money up. Now, what that does is it lets them see that you're in the trenches. You're in there, you're doing stuff, and you don't need them. Now, the purpose of this is just, again, so they get to know you. They get to see what you're up to. You'll know you've done the right thing if the bank manager contacts you, emails you, and tells you to stop sending him stuff. Just, you'll probably say, look, you're sending me, you're not asking me for any money, so stop sending me stuff. That's a good sign. Because what you're doing is you're building up a digital footprint with the bank. And what you really want to happen is the day that that bank manager is tasked with finding a home for 20 million quid, 30 million quid or whatever, because they have a target to reach or they've not reached their lending target. So the head office will say, go out and find developers who are doing projects and lend them some money. So if you have a digital footprint there, they're going to remember you. You're going to be the squeaky wheel that gets the oil. That's the purpose.
Okay, so this is a bit like when we talk about our social media, cold traffic as opposed to warm traffic, isn't it? It's, you've had a point of contact, you've built up a bit of a relationship, and it's, the conversation starts flowing. It's like anything. I don't know about you, Ray, but you know when someone phones you up, if you've never heard of them, you don't know who they are, you can be sometimes a little bit more curt in your response to them, and you feel quite happy to hang up. Yeah. If it's someone you've met and they're phoning you, I don't know about you, but I always feel a little bit more guilty about wanting to end the phone call, so I might let them talk a bit longer. And I guess that's it. If you know someone, you're far more likely to build on that relationship and see if you can take it further. And is it human nature? Bank managers, they always like to know what people are up to, and they always like to piggyback someone who's being successful, someone who's, you know, jump on the bandwagon of someone who's doing something great. So I think that's really good advice. Yeah. Is that right? But how easy is it to get through to the right person in the bank in the first instance?
Well, I've not found it terribly difficult. And when I've encouraged people to do this, I've not had anybody come back to me and say that they can't get through to someone. Their details are usually public domain. You can usually find out who they are. Getting an appointment, you know, some banks are quite good in that you can get an appointment within a couple of days. Others, not so much. You know, in the summertime when they're away on holiday and around December when people are away on holiday, it's more difficult. But generally, I've not had any... No, I've not had any heard anything to the contrary that it's difficult to get through. No, quite easy.
Okay, really. And do these guys, ladies, gents, who are the ones holding the keys to the big safe and the money, do they typically work in the big city branches, or are they sort of affiliated to whatever's left on the high street? Do you have to pretty much go into the main city branch for this sort of thing?
You do, yeah. They tend to be in the bigger branches. That's not to say that there won't be some in smaller branches. Just from my experience, I've found that they all tend to be in the bigger branches in cities. So, yeah.
Okay, I've got a question for you. When you went for this visit, and you can, if as the story unfolds, you can tell us in a bit, but did you get shown the door to the underwriting and credit department? because this mythical place where the people who make the final... yay or nay decision. We've just got to refer it to this department. We've got to talk to the guys in underwriting. We've got to talk to the credit department. I'm convinced that the door into that department is about 4 inches square and there's no way you can get in. Is that true?
Here's what I was told by the head of property of a major bank. He said to me, our biggest challenge is know your client. If we know who the person is, then we can make a value judgment early on as to how much we will advance and how much we'll lend them. And now what he means by that is loan to value. So the holy grail for people is who are in property is that they're doing so many projects, they don't have any money, they want 100% funding. That's unrealistic from a bank. Okay, you're not going to get it. You'll easily get 60%. The more they know you and the more they know what you're up to, they will up that to 65%, maybe even more. So that's what it comes down to. Now, when it comes to this mythical department saying yay or nay, I've been told by the head of property that they will do that within 24 hours if they know who you are already. But it takes them 2 to 3 months to get to know you. That's what causes the problems. Now, when it comes to underwriting, it's pretty straightforward. They calculate, they have a look, they say, okay, they'll want a RICS valuation. If you say the RICS valuation says that the building is worth £1 million and we're putting up 300,000, we want you to put up 70, they're more likely to come back and say, well, we'll put up 60%. So now you've got a 10% gap. Now that 10% gap represents MES funding, and in the funding stack, you could have the bank putting up 60, you're putting up 30, and then you need a MES funder to put up 10. So okay. 60% is going to be relatively cheap. The 30% is going to be your equity. So that's going to be an equity split at the far end. And there might be a coupon on that. And then for the MES funding, you might need to borrow that from, again, a lender, an angel, a slightly higher rate. So your overall, if you're paying 4 or 5 from the bank and then you're paying something else for the MES funding and something else towards the equity, so it might cost you 15, 16% across the board for the funding. But that's good if you can get it for 100%.
Okay, one of the things that I'm going to come back to, but obviously there's a couple of terms in there that some of our listeners, some of our friends listening will be thinking, okay, what's MES funding? What's a coupon on the final payout and what have you? But before you answer those, I just want to, before I forget, because I will forget otherwise, it's the key thing, and we've spoken about this before on the How to Raise Money podcast. It's when you're talking about building up that relationship can take 2, 3, 4 months to do. This is the sort of thing that, folks, you should be doing now before you find the deal that has to complete in 7 days, because it ain't going to make a whole hill of beans difference if you take the bank manager to Burger King every lunchtime or whatever for a week.
It's not going
to. Yeah, big spender, exactly. You know, it's not going to make a difference there. You've got to do it over time. And it's like the old thing of there's no such thing as an overnight success. You've got to put in the groundwork. And Ray, you are highlighting for our listeners a really key thing, which is be proactive, get out there, do it, start now, build it up. It's amazing how when You know, time flies, and as you're building it up, 2, 3, 4 months goes by very quickly. Mm-hmm. But if you've been doing that contact, suddenly when that deal comes in, you are in a much better position. So that's great advice, Ray.
Yep. Okay.
So hang on, coupon on Mez.
Coupon and Mez. Explain that. All right. I'm conscious we want to try and keep this podcast to a 30-minute commute. Okay, so a coupon is basically an amount of interest that's going to be paid on an amount of money. That's all. So if you take an investor, let's say we've got, I'm just looking at my board here, we've got some that will put in 100%. So they will want to put in the money at a coupon rate, so 8%. So if it's a JV partner who's going to put up £500,000 and then they're going to get a split of the profit at the end, then the coupon will represent the amount of money they've loaned you. So that's separate from the profit. So the coupon, if the coupon's 8%, you pay them back 8% on the money, and then the profit that's left gets split 50-50. That's what a coupon is, if you like. Okay. Mezz funding is just basically called mezzanine funding. It's funding that you need to get up to the next level. That's really all it is. If you think of the funding stack, as I mentioned it earlier on there, if you need £1 million, you might get 600,000 from the bank, 300,000 from an equity investor or a lender who you know, and that 10% shortfall would be called mezz funding, and you'll get somebody that will come up. And there are people that specialize in that. There's people that like to do bridging. There's people that like to do development finance. There's people that like to do mezz funding. You know, they understand it. It's just another form, another name for just another tranche of money. That's all.
So what was the outcome then for the bank manager? How much money has he got, and who's he been lending to?
Right. Well, the bank manager, you know, I went to see him and I said, look, anecdotally, word on the street is you're not lending any money to anybody. He said, oh, yes, of course we are. He said, we've loaned £1 billion this year already. I said, fantastic. Who have you loaned it to? And then he rattled off the name of three companies, one that had got 750 million, another one that had got 200 million, and one that had got 50 million. So I said, so you've loaned it to three companies. In a year. I'm like, well, you know, you must be so overworked. It's unbelievable. And they had 21 billion that they were looking to lend in the next 3 years. Now, if they're only going to lend £1 billion to three, then they're not going to be terribly overworked. But they were actively looking. They want people to make applications. So if you're a developer listening to this and you need a couple of million quid, or you're looking towards your next project, you don't have it yet, go and see the bank now. Let them know what you're up to. Keep them informed. Do a follow-up Friday. Send them stuff. Tell them you're not borrowing any money now, but that you want them to know what you're up to. Keep chipping away at them. You can do that now. Absolutely.
Yeah. Perfect. Great advice. So although he's lent £1 billion, it's only gone to three people, and he's almost, it sounded like he was almost saying, Ray, please, could you help me? Have a word with Nigel on the podcast. Tell everyone, share the message. Let them start knocking on my door, build those relationships, and money will be in your back pocket before you can say Jack Robinson. Is that the top and bottom of it?
That's it. That's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, Ray, our job here is done. You know.
Good.
Okay, just before we go, I've just got another letter in here from one of our listeners. It says, Dear Ray and Nigel, a great podcast. I'm just popping down to the pub. I'll see you there in half an hour. What do you want to drink?
Okay.
And that's from Graham. So thank you, Graham. I'll have a pint. Ray will have some grape-based produce, no doubt.
Red wine. Blood of Jesus.
Red wine. There you go. So we'll see you down the pub.
Okay, on that bombshell, thank you, Nigel. Thank you, listeners of How to Raise Money podcast. See you on the next one.
If you like the podcast, please share it with your friends, give us a review, and tell everyone about it. It's great. Love having you here. Thank you very much, everyone. See you later, Ray.
Cheers. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the How to Raise Money podcast. It's made for people who want to raise money as debt or investment equity for their business or property proposal or empire. The website has all the useful links and underlying research, and you can get downloads of the checklists and other useful information. You can find all that at howtoraisemoney.co.uk. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Ray_McLennan and Nigel Best at Positive Nigel. You can check the blog at raisingangelfinance.blogspot.co.uk. See you next time, where we can show you how to raise money. There is abundance. There is money enough for everyone on the planet. The question is, who has yours?